Down to Brass Tacks. It's 5 minutes after noon. Welcome to the program.
Hi, David. I'm still on.
Yes, sir.
Right, you were asking me how do I feel about crime in this century.
Yes.
And I was hastening to say that it spiraled out of control.
And what aspect of it, in your judgment, is out of
violent
control?
Violent crime. Crime involving robberies, use of firearms, murders. There's also the element of the fear of crime.
Yes.
Persons are afraid to venture out after certain hours or to go to certain locations because of the perception that you're likely to encounter gun violence or be robbed.
Are you going through that yourself?
No, as a former law enforcement officer and an attorney, I have been trained, so it wouldn't bother me that much. I fear for my fellow man.
Now, tell me, to what degree are you encountering people who are actually telling you that?
I had the unfortunate situation this morning. One of my daughters, while they were asleep last night, someone came into her mom's home and actually attempted to rape one of the females that was present in there.
Wow.
Yes. That is so close to home as come. We've got persons who are doing these things with impunity. Look at the brazen robbery at Roy Smith Bar. Brazen. That kind of thing was unheard of 5-10 years ago. It's just brazen. Where persons believe that they can do it with impunity. It doesn't matter who's present. It doesn't matter who they traumatize. It does not matter the long-lasting effect their actions would have on the individuals that they encounter. One goal, alcohol and money. Something that they can sell quickly, like alcohol, jewelry, and money. And I'm saying that if the government of the day has that piece of legislation, why not use it? I mean, it boggles the mind. And they can even make amendments to it, if that is what they desire, to ensure that it doesn't target a specified group of individuals or specific areas in Barbados. It should target any and every one where the intelligence lead to as being involved in criminal activity, especially firearms, ammunition, robberies, and things like that. And wanted persons, because there are quite a few wanted persons that the police would like to interview. So I'm saying that the Attorney General of Barbados needs to come and face the public. And this is a suggestion that I'm going to make now to you, David, that you can have him, along with the Minister of Health, on your Sunday Brass Tacks program.
Well, I want to let you know, and I'm going to say, that I sent him a message several days ago asking him to make himself available at his convenience so that you could talk about some of the challenges directly with the members of the public. I haven't had any response to that up to now. But I'm just telling you that I did it.
Agreed, but that says a lot. It should be his duty to come and face the public of Barbados, those who are actually affected by an uptick in criminal activity in this country. And the police, they have the tools to deal with it. I am sure with intelligence-driven policing, in respect of the use of this piece of legislation of which I spoke, I am sure that there could be a reduction in criminal activity, and also a lot of the guns and ammunition will be taken off the street. Because persons are not going to be comfortable if they know that their area will be cordoned off and searched. The thing is to make criminals uncomfortable. If you make criminals, the persons who are law-abiding have nothing to fear. They have nothing to fear. But persons who are bent on crime their activities, especially their movements by night and all that, if they know the police are likely to block certain roads and cordon off certain areas and they're going to be caught in the net, crime will come down drastically. That's one point, David. I don't know what.
So the piece of legislation that you referred to again is which one?
The piece that was passed by the LP administration while they were in power, and it empowered the police to cordon off certain areas.
The Labour Party campaigned against that.
Hours.
You remember that?
Pardon me?
The Labour Party had criticized that.
Right, but then sometimes, David, you have to eat humble pie and admit that what you're doing is not working and that all the consultants that you bring, they're not making any difference in what is happening on the ground. Let the police men and women who are charged with that responsibility, let them carry out their jobs by empowering them with the use of this legislation. Evidently, the consultants, their advice is not working. We are, Barbadians are not, if you ask the average Barbadian, David, if he's satisfied with the level of criminal activity in Barbados as it relates to gun violence and ammunition and all that, youth crimes committed by the use of the gun, and violent crimes in general, like the robbery that we saw at Roy Smith's shop. I am saying that Barbadians are not satisfied. I was in the gym this morning early, and that was the topic. I am saying that persons are not happy with what they are seeing in this country. And the Attorney General of Barbados needs to come and face the public.
Well, I think, I also believe that there is a significant role for the Commissioner of Police. The Office of Commissioner of Police in Barbados matters quite a lot. Both the Attorney General and the Commissioner of Police would be expected to speak more to what is being done and can be done. Now, one of the things that I've noted, you know how many years the police put out statistics saying that crime gone down? You know, if you were to monitor the years that we have had these statistics coming out, you would think that crime is no, by now, it should have been non-existent. I mean, I'm talking about the break-ins and them those types of things. Huh? I must tell you that using statistics can allay the fears of some people, but there are others who just after a while do not take the statistics seriously. Especially
because it becomes tone deaf to it. To me, yes. It's a placebo. It's when you overplay something. To my mind, when the Barbadian public are shocked by some violent event like the September 3rd event, and then afterwards they're going to come and make a public statement saying, "But oh, there's a reduction in burglaries and assaults." People are not really interested in that. They're not. You're asking them to divert the focus from this shocking event, but they're not really interested in that when it relates to their own personal lives and their own personal safety. You think that if you can go into town and be confronted with somebody shooting at somebody, you're going to be worried about how many burglaries were reduced over the last 3 months and all of that, except it affects you personally. That is going to be the furthest thing from your mind.
But you know, they think they're clever. When they come with that, they think that they are so clever. And it is all part of the spin, the political spin that is put on these things. When, as you have said, people out there are concerned. Now, you know what you have to do? Because many times we discuss these things kind of in the abstract. Mm-hmm. You see that experience that you talked about last night?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you didn't tell us that, chances are very few people would hear about it because of the nature of it. Huh? But
right.
The issue here is how are those people who experienced that last night reacting today? What's happening there?
I had to hold her for about nearly half an hour. I had to reassure her that nobody would harm her and that I love her and I will protect her with my life. I had to reassure her with that. But that doesn't change the fact that she had to be in a house and experience where a criminal was actually a couple of meters away from her bedroom door, which was locked, and that he escaped through the back door. Those things don't just go away, you know.
A woman lost her.
Traumatized for a while with that.
A woman lost her son back in February of this year. He was shot in her house. She hasn't been back to the house to live since then. You know.
That's why the Attorney General of Barbados needs to come to the public. Also, the
Well, the reason why he may not be coming is that he may not be able to give us what we are looking for. If you got something to say, you would come. If you had a solution, you would easily come. But
why not eat humble pie and try the legislation that is there? It is there. I mean, it's better to try something than to do nothing. To my mind, it is better because the framers of that legislation were targeting things like the incident that happened at Deacon's Farm where all those shots were fired into the air from high-powered weapons. That was almost a direct response to that. But what I'm saying is that why knock something if you and be bold enough to come up and say, or be man enough to say, well, at the time we knock it because we thought X, Y, Z, but we are willing to try to, we're going to use it now, or even we're going to make amendments to make it more palatable, I guess, to them. And use it because the public of Barbados are afraid. Fear of crime, to my mind, sometimes is more dangerous than the actual crime itself. If you're afraid to venture out after dark, if you're afraid to, like the old people, go to church after a certain time and all of that, or gather on a street corner because some, like what happened in the plane, somebody's just going to come and spray the area with bullets. And that, you know, you might be just in the front of your house after a long day's work, relaxing, having, you know, and somebody comes and spray the area with bullets. I'm saying that criminals should not be comfortable in my country, and right now they seem to be quite comfortable in what they're doing.
Yeah, because they have been able to establish that they can breach the law, and to a large extent, they feel as though they get away with it. Even when they're apprehended, it seems that what they have to go through and the process and everything, they still feel as though, so what? I mean, catch me if you can, and if you catch me, well, so what? I go and spend some time in prison, and I'm back out on the streets. This person says something else here. She said, I see a trend in Barbados where people are interrupting law enforcement officers in the line of their duty, all around the police with cameras, cussing and carrying on. And they say, especially females.
Yes. And I look at that with disdain because in my day that wouldn't happen.
This is it. But this is a sense of where, this is where law and order is breaking down, huh?
Yeah, because that is that tantamount to obstruction in the execution of your duty, and it's right there. Why it's not being enforced, it boggles my mind. I don't understand why it's not being enforced. And the caller is correct, especially females, and they're swearing at the police, and they're cussing and abusing the police while the police are doing their job. And
yeah, saying, but the police, why is it that the police don't arrest more of them?
I do not know, but back then in my day, like I said, David,
you wouldn't put up with that?
But I arrested at least 10 of them people. I'm telling you, me alone, me. Those who know me know that I would have done that. And none of them would have come around me with that. It don't matter where it was.
Because it makes the police look soft. And it makes them look as though they are afraid to do their jobs.
And they're close, in real close proximity. And actually pulling away the person the police is trying to arrest and all that. I've seen that on video. And I'm wondering, why is it allowed to continue? Why? I don't know what is happening, but why is it being allowed to continue? Law is there. It's called obstruction in the execution of your duty. I'm just calling on the cops who encounter such behavior to enforce the law, enforce what is on the statute.
Somebody is suggesting that they're emulating what they're seeing from the United States coming out of the Black Lives Matter movement, that I don't know if that is a fair interpretation of it.
No,
but
no,
that was
that is
there
not a
before.
fair interpretation. No, it's not. I don't believe it is. Because in the United States, it's a different kettle of fish. We have downright racist police officers, unfairing persons who are of black, black people who are unarmed in most cases and who pose no threat in almost all of the cases that I've seen on video. No threat to life or limb, but yet they are either tased or they are shot, or they are killed or whatever. That's something completely different to what happens in Barbados, especially in the minibus stand. If a police goes to apprehend somebody in the minibus stand, it's the women first who come out and they you can't carry this going so man and you're this and you're that and you're next.
Yeah, okay.
I am saying that they would end up in the before the magistrate, they would end up before the court. I'm telling you, back in my day, they would have ended up before the court. Back to the next thing though, David, COVID. I'm not happy with what's happening with persons coming into Barbados from all other jurisdictions. I'm not happy with the protocols that the Minister of Health has put in place. And I'm saying that they need to be revised and more stringent. There's nothing wrong with demanding that persons traveling to our country have two consecutive negative COVID tests before they board the aircraft, and that the airline don't let them on unless they can show that. 1 7 days before you travel and 1 2 days before you travel. And they could even be advised on the government's website that they should, where possible, refrain from mixing with other persons prior to travel, only with their families. The idea is to protect small, vulnerable economies like Barbados, because we can't afford a shutdown, David. A shutdown would cripple our economy right now. And if there is community spread and is rampant, is not out of control, we will have to shut.
The question
I
of...
Rather than wait until that happens, why not? Because persons are going to come to Barbados anyway. Why not wait? I mean, why not put those measures in place? And I know you must manage risk, but I am all for making the playing field level. I don't believe it should be high risk, low risk, medium risk. I believe that come whosoever may that enter this country should quarantine. Whether you have a negative test result or not, you should quarantine. So one of the requirements would be that you book a stay at a hotel for that be identified by the government for at least 1 week, or that the government makes available on its website that we currently have 30, 40 spaces available at Harrison, Paragon or even Harrison Point or whatever, and they'll be allocated by first come, first serve. And after that's gone, then you can only travel if you, whether you're a resident of Barbados or not, if you have checked into a hotel at least for 1 week to quarantine.
Where do you Everybody stand should do on that. The designation of high risk, medium risk, and low risk?
I'm saying that if you've come from a country where it is rampant, then it'll be high risk. If you come from a country where they're is not that rampant, but it's still there, then it will be medium. And if you are like from Barbados, for example, we will be considered low risk. But I'm saying that what we have seen is that countries graduate from low risk to medium to high without telling us anything. Look what happened in Jamaica. Look what happened in Trinidad. Community spread, and even Guyana. Community spread caused them to graduate quickly, and they don't have to inform us that they graduated. We will find out in the news, but by then persons would have traveled here. So if you have that all-encompassing program where persons must quarantine, must have those two negative tests, and when I mean quarantine, I don't mean that you're somewhere you can go to the supermarket or go to the movies. Quarantine means that you are not leaving there except the person giving the okay, the health authorities. And they must enforce that, whether you're rich or poor. Because I've been told of persons who came in, and the very next day they were on the golf course and all that. I don't understand how things like that can happen. But I'm calling on the Minister of Health too to make himself available for Brass Act Sunday to field questions from the public of Barbados.
Yeah, you picked Brass Act Sunday, but I can tell you something. The place for them is the General Brass Tax, because we have more time Monday to Friday than we have on Sunday.
but I want as many Barbians as possible
to hear.
And not only to hear, but to bombard them with all the questions that they have that they've been asking at the dinner table and the street corners and the shops and in the gyms and all that. I want them to put it to the ministers, let them understand how we feel over here.
Well, I tend not to ask ministers to come to Brass Tacks unless I genuinely believe that we are at a point where it is necessary to hear from them. And on the issue of crime, I really believe the time has come for that kind of forum. Now, they can pick and choose whether they want to go to CBC or whoever, but I can say this. At the end of the day, the questions are still there to be asked and answered. For sure, if you come here and I'm involved in this process of questioning, I'm not going to duck any questions that people want me to put to anybody who comes here. I don't care who it is. So they can make up their mind. All right?
But people, we're on the same page, David.
No. People want to get some serious answers. And all of the pretty talk that we have had has been, is reduced to naught when you continue to have the kind of presentation that you have made here today. I want to thank you very much for sharing your thoughts,
David,
with us.
Okay,
thank
you.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Friday edition, it's 12:43. We're going on till 2 o'clock. Let me welcome the next caller. Hello. Somebody is blaming the politicians, the media, and the people for what's happening in the country, the crime and
Hello?
Shootings. Yes, you're on the air.
Hello, my name?
You are on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm calling about the quarantine when one arrives from the UK.
Yes.
First, I want to thank all the staff who work at the airport and at the government facility. They are so hardworking and so understaffed. It's unbelievable. Now, I will start with the requirement from leaving the UK to come to Barbados. We have to get a COVID and PCR test. 72 hours prior to arrival, with a cost of £250 at a government-accredited organization, which we fulfill before we arrive, because Virgin Atlantic do not allow passengers on the plane unless they have the COVID test. On arrival to Barbados, we queued. Well, I left the airport four hours after arrival. I think there were like two members of staff who dealt with the initial interview, the second interview, and then we had to wait for transport to our designated places for quarantine. This was a nightmare because no food was available. Coming from London, you're not allowed to bring any liquids or anything through the security. And when you get into the duty-free, there's no food available. So you travel, and when you arrive in Barbados, when we got out to the baggage area, there was no food available, no shops open. Nothing was offered to us, not even a glass of cold water. And we traveled to the designated area, and again, two members of staff did all the checking in. There was not even cold water available. We went to our rooms, We had Wi-Fi. I must mention that, which we are eternally grateful. The building is 18th century. The sleeping, you slept in a dorm. Toilets didn't have doors or showers. I thought I'd run into a nightmare, physically. First thing that was available was 10 o'clock Sunday morning from the staff who provided breakfast. Again, it's not a criticism of the staff. They cannot do what's impossible with the number of people that they have. We were able to order in Chefette between 9 and 5, but Chefette didn't open till 10, so it was just an absolute nightmare.
How long did you endure this?
I endured it from arrival until, I would say, 10 a.m. Sunday morning. That was that part of it. The second part is the testing.
The arrival would have been the Saturday.
The Saturday, yeah.
Okay.
Then, and again, I have to stress, I'm not criticizing the staff, because the staff done over and beyond what any human being can do. I was due to have my test this Sunday. I didn't have my test this Sunday because the protocol that is written for London is that we have the test and then we remain there and we get our test on the Sunday and we leave on the Monday morning once your test is negative. I didn't get my test on the Sunday. I didn't get my test on the Monday. And on the Tuesday, I didn't have a test. I had a test because one of the nurses was summoned from home on her only day off to come in and carry out the test because I made a complaint, or email to the MP who escalated it to whoever was responsible. Now, the nurse thought I had complained about her, but it wasn't about her. It was my civil liberties were being infringed. I was due to leave there on the Monday, and I didn't actually leave until the Wednesday. And when you're in these organizations, you cannot go out. You know, there's a separate time that you can have things delivered to you. And if you don't have family and extended people here in Barbados, that's not available to you.
Well, based on your experience,
yeah,
what are some of the recommendations that you would make to the authorities here to improve that situation, therefore?
Yeah, first, they need to increase the number of staff because two people cannot deal with hundreds of people. You know, you need to increase the number of staff.
Hundreds of people where?
Who arrived at the airport.
On arrival?
Yeah, on arrival. You know, there's no sitting facilities. Can you imagine? You flew 8 hours, wearing a mask all the time. Then you're in the airport for another 4 hours, continuously wearing a mask and not even somewhere to sit. You know, it's beyond anyone's imagination. I could not imagine it. Then secondly, you're transported to a place and they cannot fulfill what's the requirement. It's not that they didn't. So they need to look at the number of staff they have in those facilities and, you know, what's available to the staff to distribute because they can't distribute what they haven't got. They didn't have enough bedding. I mean, that was more of a personal issue because I brought a couple of bed sheets in my luggage. But had I known there was such a desperate shortage, and myself and others, we would have brought even more. You know, it is beyond anyone's imagination and what is happening to people who have to go into those facilities. Now, on the other hand, people who went to hotels, and I can only speak of two people that I know and I've communicated with, they were locked in their room and they were given, their food was left outside their door. Now, we're not complaining about that. But the day that they were supposed to have the test, they didn't. And it's only on the fifth day when they call and complain that they were actually tested. So instead of leaving the Monday morning, they left the Wednesday morning. And when you're at a hotel, the price is at up.
Right, but you also had the option of going to a hotel, but decided that you would go to Paragon instead, right?
I didn't go to Paragon. It was another venue that
another
was available.
Another venue, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know how it is. This COVID-19 situation has thrown not only us, but several other countries in a tailspin. I mean, you're trying to do the best that you can with limited resources. We won't necessarily get perfection, but where there are weaknesses, clearly suggestions from people like you can be made, and you know the authorities then have to determine to what extent they may be able to respond. Now, I have had contact with people who have been through the process. One friend of mine came in from New York, and he was quite comfortable at Paragon. He said, well, you know, I ain't paying no money to go to no hotel. That's too costly, and therefore he'd had some experience with the military type thing, you know, so police and all of that. So he felt at home at Paragon, but there are other people who are not going to feel that comfortable. I'd be curious as to that apart, though, what would have motivated you to come to Barbados at this time?
Because I've retired in Barbados. So my mother is terminally ill.
Yes.
And I had to go to London.
Right. And therefore, that was to see her there, or is she terminally ill in Barbados?
In London. She's terminally ill in London.
Okay.
And what happened, because she's got a diagnosis, she ended up with gout, and she thought it was the end. And because no one was there to say, look, you need to look at something else, because her feet swollen as big as a balloon, and she's in so much pain.
Yes.
So she was treated, and when she became comfortable, I returned home to Barbados. Because I lived in London, but now I'm retired in Barbados.
Yes. Well, you're out of isolation now, I believe.
We weren't in isolation, we were in quarantine.
You were in quarantine, okay.
Yes. Once you're in quarantine, you see, this is the difference. When you're in quarantine, you already have a negative test. And then you have to wait for those 2 days to get the second test that has to be negative before your release. And it's the delay time in you having to spend two extra nights in some place where you could probably tolerate two nights, but instead it's extended to four.
Yes.
You know, so you don't come with that mindset that you have to experience that. Plus, when you have health problems like myself, who are diabetic and hypertension,
yes.
My blood pressure was 161 over 110, and my pulse rate was 108.
Largely and, you know, because you didn't anticipate these challenges.
Yes, and the lack of food, because had I known that the situation it was, and I'm stressing that because had I been able to bring it in, and anyone coming from London would tell you, the security there is so high that we can't really travel with things. I mean, people coming in from other parts of the world, they can, you know, one lady from New York told me she had chickpeas and rice and fish and whatever. We can't do that. So there makes a difference in, you know, how you arrive. Because people might say, oh, she arrived and she should have brought something. But you haven't got that facility there.
Did you get an opportunity to actually put your ideas and suggestions in writing to the authorities?
Well, this is the first time I got through to the radio. I wrote to my MP when I wasn't released on Monday, you know, so that I got the test done. And it was somebody who was off who had to come in and do the test, which I greatly appreciate her because, you know, they don't really get much time off. So there's not sufficient people carrying out the testing in these establishments. so that people can leave within the time that you're told that you would leave.
Okay. So you ended up having to stay longer than you feel comfortable staying. Look, we're different people.
Yeah.
And I know that there are some who will say, oh, well, you know, you got to grin and bear it. You got to appreciate the difficulties and stuff like that. But you have been at the center of it and you formulated your own view as to how the situation can be improved.
Yeah.
I would seriously recommend that you perhaps go one step further and document your thoughts to the authorities. Your views may very well coincide with those of other people who might have reported the same thing to the authorities, and to see to what extent some adjustments can be made to address things like being able to get something to eat and to drink in the circumstances, and as best as we can make people feel as comfortable as possible in very difficult circumstances. Sorry to hear about your situation, but thank you very much for at least sharing with members of the public, and especially Barbadians who may be coming home, those who listen to us in Britain and stuff. Once they hear that, they may better prepare themselves, because part of what you are saying to us is that there was an element of surprise, and that in itself can make things a little bit more challenging. But thank you very much for calling us. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air?
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
A blessed day to you, sir.
A blessed day to you, too.
Yes, and I wish the best for you the weekend, the station, and the entire country as well, you know, because with what is happening now, every now and again, we can hear the shooting and the things of that sort. It can be very uncomfortable, yeah. And one does not know when or where. And there is a serious need for concern about these things. So that's why I always like to wish my country the best, especially, you know, in these times. So I want that for it, our nation as well. There's lots of issues that is very fluid now, but what I would like to speak about, there are two things if I can. I want to, you would realize that I think it was Saturday's papers gone when the Prime Minister was speaking about having some moratorium on the, if she can get a loan to help assist us with our COVID situation.
No, what she was talking about was trying to get an ease on the debt that we have incurred as a result of COVID-19.
Right, she's looking at it. She was talking about I think the newspaper talked about a 7-year ease on that. I don't know. I mean, I wish her well, and I can understand her, you know, her thoughts on that, because these are trying times for the world over, and I wish her well in, you know, looking at it. I don't know. Well, she said she is co-chair of the one of these financial institutions. I don't know if she would be able to get that on the agenda, because, and I don't think that that's the only thing that there would be, would have had on the agenda.
No, I think that there are other countries that are expressing a similar concern. I mean, if you look at what has happened with COVID, governments have had to incur so much more expense and increase their debt. And therefore, what is being discussed right now is to get some long-term ease on that particular debt.
Well, I think now that we've just had a restructuring of our debt early in the year when the government came into office.
Yes.
I don't know if this depends on if she's able to ascertain this loan now. I don't know if that will be adhered to, you know, will be given.
No, please. Remember, you're confusing two things here. You're confusing private debt that was rescheduled, which the government says will not, they're not touching going in that direction at all. You're confusing that with the concessional financing that Barbados has been able to get from multilateral agencies, what they call development partners. So, you know, initially some people started to get jitters over what came across as an interpretation that the government was going to tackle this issue of private debt and come back at that. That is not on the table at all right? So you're talking agencies like World Bank and Inter-American Development Bank, IMF, and the Latin American Agency and that sort of thing. That's what you're talking about, that kind of assistance.
But I wish the Prime Minister well in her effort. Now, I noticed as well that the chief economist for the World Bank, as he was speaking, he was saying to Barbados, in other words, don't hold your breath expecting anything of the sort that you'll be looking for, because then that is not something that is on the cards as such. So he was very particular in pointing out these things, even though you're asking for them. These are things that are not on the cards. But something that concerned me was something that he said when he mentioned something in that article, that there are Caribbean countries that are wealthy. And I shook my head. I said, I wonder which of those countries he could be talking about in the Caribbean that could be wealthy. And I said to myself, these people, when I say these people, these world institutions try to, they put things the way they want to put them. And especially when they're going to talk about per capita income. And I, you know, Mr. Ellis, I think that they really do a great disservice to third world countries like us, where they are talking about the kind of measurement that they measure it by their own yardstick. And when you can collate all of the income in the country, and then you can divide that over the population and say your income per capita is so-and-so, I shake my head really in disbelief with these things, you know. But I wish the Prime Minister well for our country, and, well, she says she is, will be carrying the torch for the entire region, which we really need to have that at this time, because in COVID is not something that anybody planned for, and the entire world really is suffering right now. And I'll tell you that if she's able to get that, there are other nations around the world that will be expecting the same thing anyway, you know. So she's not, would not be only carrying the torch for the Caribbean.
It's part of a bigger movement, though.
yes, it would be. Yes.
And there is there's some
hello. Oh,
sorry about that. Got some kind of frog in my throat, but I'm saying it's part of a wider movement that is gaining some measure of momentum out there, because clearly there's several countries in this position forced to incur additional debt. You look at St. Lucia. St. Lucia says it can no longer afford a stabilization program. If you can't afford a stabilization program, what's going to happen to your economy? You know, the big countries that have had to be involved in stimulus programs to be able to support people. You listen to the United States, all like, no, they're talking about another stimulus program to support people who are jobless and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And the same principle applies to us.
But so, the Congress now, and the Congress has a big problem with that now, both sides, because in one side
the politics
wants more, the other side doesn't want to give it. So it's creating a problem, and it's a domino effect around the world.
The complaint is that the Democrats are accused of tying the program to other things that they wanted done which the Republicans don't agree with. So, you see, linking these things together is part of what is creating the gridlock on the issue in the United States.
Anyway, Mr. Ellis, there are other things I would like to speak about, but I'll have to do that maybe another day.
I must tell you, I watched some of the... I watched some of the confirmation of this new Supreme Court judge. I thought she handled herself very well, actually.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if she doesn't get nominated. I mean, the Senate has got the numbers anyhow, but I didn't think that she handled herself badly at all.
I think so, yeah. I listened to her, the interview that she had, and I thought she was very, very out front spoken. Well, there are certain things, of course, that she would not answer or couldn't give her, because especially with this Obama thing, and she would not have given a decision on it now, because then that would affect when she has to sit in on it. And I can understand that, and one could agree with her, because in a case that is pending now, she could not out front go and speak on it now.
Did you hear when she was asked whether she would sit in on any hearing related to the outcome of this election?
I noticed she didn't say yes or no.
Well, I got the distinct impression that she said yes.
But it
offended some people.
I'm sure that Trump would not have wanted to hear her to say that she would sit out. But I didn't get.
Well, she said that she didn't discuss these matters with the president, and it would have been inappropriate to do so.
Yeah, I didn't think that she really answered and said that she would sit out. I really didn't get that as such out front. You know, I thought that she was very ambiguous about these things and didn't give a direct to give anybody.
Well, I think it's reasonable to say that you cannot just come out of the blue without an actual case before you and determine exactly what you're going to say or do.
Mm-hmm.
In many instances, she was being pressured to do just that. And she said, well, I can't do that. I would have to have something before me. I have to look at the precedents and all of that before I could come and give you an answer.
Right. Ms. Ellis, I am from this distance where I am. I am concerned about the way how that voting process is being undertaken in the United States.
In the U.S.?
He's continuing pushing, but he has his agenda, because you know when he's continuing to push this, because he's aware that he's not going to get the vote.
You should hear.
So the thing is to create the confusion now and the doubt.
You should hear.
So that he would have grounds to go to the Supreme Court.
You should hear from somebody, Barbadians, who had to vote here. The agents who are eligible to vote in the U.S. have been voting through the U.S. Embassy here. And some of them have reported that they didn't know which of the senators and stuff they were supposed to be voting for. They say, that's what they tell me. They tell me what they got when they went. I think they went this week.
Mm.
And what they got was the new vice president and president, the candidates in that regard, but they were looking for the lists of the senators as well.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that. They came back out of the process being somewhat concerned about that.
Because
I haven't heard any official talk about it or anything like that, but that was what was reported to me by some of the people who actually went through.
You know there's a reason for that, because in the thing is not to identify.
Well, I don't know. I think the people at the U.S. Embassy perhaps are the ones who should explain what the process is, how it differs from the past, what was the objective. All of that perhaps needs to be explained to those people who went through the exercise.
And there's nobody explaining it to them?
Well,
they're left like up in the air.
And there's
a reason for it to confuse the whole situation.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, all right.
See what happens.